Something happened today that is the first time this has happened in decades. It's really exciting. I cannot wait to talk about it. Thank you for being here. My name is Valerie McKeon. You are listening to the Dear Creative Soul podcast. This podcast is my love letter to you, fellow creative soul, whether you are an artist or somebody who is just feels that sense of creativity that you want to explore, the creatively curious, you are welcome here. And I hope that this podcast encourages you on your creative journey because it can feel lonely and it takes a great deal of courage. I am being joined today by my husband, Mac.
Hello.
We are actually in our new home. We moved from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania to outside of Nashville, Tennessee. And this is the first time we're recording here in the new setup and everything. So this is kind of like a big episode for that.
Yeah, the new studio. I was going to say, like, I'm just like looking around as you're talking and I love the vibe in here more than what we had at the last place. So I'm digging it.
We're settling in. So it's good to be recording again, to have another podcast. So what happened today? This is sort of an impromptu turn on the mic because today, for the first time in decades, Billy Joel released new music. He released a single today. And for those of you who are familiar with Billy Joel, you will know what a huge deal this is because he just stopped. I mean, he was on top of the world, just quit putting out music, and he disappeared for a while. Then he came back and he was doing still the concerts and the Madison Square Garden residency, but he was always singing his previous music.
Yeah, 1993 is when his last album came out, the River of Dreams album. And so that was 31 years ago. So he almost made it 30 years. And I know he did release a single like in 2007 like that, but who cares?
Yeah.
This is more of the monumental, because that was sort of a throwaway, a love song for his wife at the time, I think, and so nobody, I mean, it was a big deal kind of, but not like this. Like, this is him like basically saying, I'm back.
Yeah. So Mac and I, we were up here in his studio. We listened to the single for the first time together. We played it through a couple times. We have not discussed it. We haven't talked about it. I said, let's turn on the mics and record and have our conversation, because why are we doing this on the podcast? There's so much here to unpack. Whether you are a Billy Joel fan or not, there is such a lesson here, I guess, in creativity. There's so much here to unpack, and I wanted to do it here on the podcast talking to you, Mac, about it.
Well, one of the things I feel like with Billy is like what we always appreciate is how wise he was, even in his 20s and 30s and 40s when he was releasing music. But now we have like actual wisdom. The man is 74 years old. So he's lived the life. He's been up and down.
He's made big mistakes.
Yep. He's made his fortune. He's a living legend at this point. So now we're getting his perspective on creativity, being an artist, having a relationship with an audience, having a relationship with yourself as a creative. And we're getting all that wisdom packed into like 4 minutes.
Yeah. My immediate reaction after I listen to it is there's such emotion to it. And I felt like he's afraid. And it was really interesting that I just had this sense he feels afraid. And in a way that was so comforting, but also just this universal feeling of an artist and a creative that it doesn't go away. He's 74 years old, and you have to wonder, why didn't he put out music before? Because he is a creative, he's an artist. Where is that energy going? Because that, if you are that way, which he is this legend lyrically, like you said, his music throughout all of his career is so deep. He's a deep thinker. He has all of these thoughts to get out. And if he wasn't expressing that in music, where was all of that going?
Well, I've always had the suspicion that, like, you know, when he dies, we're going to get this massive catalog of music he's been writing in secret and recording for forever. Maybe not true. I just totally made that up. But I think I don't think a man like that or a creative like that could go 30 years and not create. Now, he has admitted many, many times that he still writes music, but not lyrics. He basically writes classical pieces, which is another great way for him to get it out. And you can sometimes express more emotion through melody than you can verse. As someone who plays the piano and has written songs like that, it sometimes you do feel as a musical creative that you get more out through the vibe and the feeling than you do with the lyrics.
But how interesting to think that he's afraid.
Mm-hmm.
He has to be. Like, he had to be have some level of fear to put this out and what the lyrics of the song speak to.
Well, I'm guilty of one of the reasons why he could be afraid. And that is when he announced this 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, I said to you, okay, this has got to be one of the greatest songs ever written because it's Billy Joel. He made a big deal about not releasing music. And now he's putting something out. So it's almost him like putting a stamp on, okay, I really believe in this. And that is such a fearful position, I believe, because he stopped for so long and now he has to come back. And so there's going to be great expectation is what I'm trying
but
to say.
But isn't that interesting though? Because there doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be the greatest song. I feel like that puts so much pressure on it.
He wrote a song about pressure, by the way.
He did.
But that's
just a lot to unpack.
I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. Is like, and I think that's the classic. So, and I'm coming at this as a guy who's been in radio his whole life and in broadcasting, and I'm around these people all the time. I know how they think. They think in terms of hits. Now, I can't claim to know how Billy Joel is thinking. I've never met him. But, you know, he's one of these guys. We love the show. You go see Billy Joel and you love it because he gets up and all he does is play hits for 2.5 hours. And when he's been making truly his fortune, his legend, his legacy through these shows over the last 10 years at Madison Square Garden and much longer before that, like, his whole life is hits. So for him to come back as an artist after a life of hit making and being known as the guy who wrote these legendary songs. I mean, Piano Man is arguably one of those songs like Yesterday by the Beatles and whatever that you kind of like are born somehow just knowing it's in your DNA. I think there's a handful of songs like that. And that's one of those songs everybody loves.
Which, by the way, I have to say, that was the final song that was played at our wedding.
There you go.
So it's important to us, too.
And well, and we named our daughter Vienna after right. one of his songs, which is his favorite song that he's ever written. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, so there is pressure there. And I think he feels the pressure. Listen to the lyrics of the song. I literally think that that's an element of the song itself is, did I wait too long? Did I succumb to the pressure and not put things out? Because I think he's realized over the last 10, I think his success over the last 10 years, selling out every single show at Madison Square Garden in minutes, selling out baseball stadiums and football stadiums in minutes. I think he is as shocked as anybody that he is still as big as he is. I always felt like he was a humble dude. And so as an artist, for him to be in a position now where he's this mega rock star.
Just a legend.
Yeah. We're saying that time and time again in this podcast, because he's a legend, for him to know, I think it's a surprise to him. Therefore, he's now coming back saying, you know what? Maybe the position I took at the end of my album in 1993, and the song was called The Last Words. He literally says, these are the last words I have to say. I think he's now realizing I maybe did succumb to the pressure, and did I wait too long? Because obviously I missed out on a potential really great relationship. And I think he's talking about the audience.
Oh, absolutely. But it's brilliant lyrically, mm-hmm. the way that he did it. But what courage mm-hmm. this took to release.
That's the lesson.
Just unbridled courage. And what's fascinating to me about that is you look at somebody like a Billy Joel and you think, you say all this stuff, okay, legend, whatever, he's selling out Madison Square Garden very top. So on one hand, you would think, well, what does he have to be afraid of? He already has all of this success. Nobody can take that away. So you can say that, sort of look at him like, well, why would you be afraid? But as a creative, looking at it from the side of the pressure, of the expectation, of what are people going to say, all of the self-doubt, that's what this song is about. It's about self-doubt. Did I make a mistake? Did I wait too long? Did I lose the magic? Am I still this person? The vulnerability of that, you look at that, and I am in utter awe of the courage that took.
I think that's the key point. I think you hit the nail on the head. And if he, at his level, was courageous enough to step forward and do this, because he's famous for saying, we've heard him say it many times, people are like, why did you stop releasing music? Elton John has continued to release music for years. And he said, well, he should have stopped too. So that comment in and of itself tells you where his heart is creatively, because he was judging Elton's music.
Maybe it and was succumbing to the pressure then.
I absolutely think it was. And so when you do see this step, it's like when you've achieved something huge and you've become like the best at something in the world or at the top, it is a lot harder to maintain that or keep that going. The pressure you put on yourself to do that, especially creatively, is out of this world. I think it's, I have in my life, I've always liked building something, and then if it's working, I like get out of it because it's like the maintaining of the pressure is so hard. I'd rather be at the bottom with nobody looking at me and continuing to build.
This is something that not a lot of people talk about, at least that I don't hear people mm-hmm. talking about, that because everything that you hear is almost like that climb to the top. It's how do you get there? How do you get this level of success creatively? But not a lot of people talk about the pressure that can come when you do have success, and then what you want to do with it, whether you pivot, change, do something off the wall. It is this expectation almost that comes up, and that can be a really scary thing. So it's interesting, the life of a creative, I think what this is teaching all of us is that when you want this life of a creative, it is one of constant courage, because it's the courage in the beginning when you are really unsure of yourself, you're putting stuff out there, maybe it's not getting a good response, maybe you feel like really vulnerable and weird and what are people saying, and it just is this really interesting part to be at the beginning. But in a way, it doesn't get better, because there's the level of once you do reach some success, you become known, somebody, you know, you feel like you have this expectation. Well, then it continues to be a courageous act, because you always have to be true to yourself.
The shift is not succumbing to creatively pleasing the audience.
Yeah, being beholden to the praise.
Well, caring about the outcome. And so in a way, Billy's fun jibe at Elton is showing an insecurity in him, where Elton just said, hey, look, I'm just going to continue to write music. I don't care if you like it or not.
I'm an artist, and this is what I do.
Exactly. He could literally write really bad albums. And frankly, in my opinion, he has a few. But good for him. He didn't care about my opinion. He didn't care about your opinion. He was getting it out there. Whereas Billy perhaps has all this unpublished music because maybe he did succumb to the pressure of the audience. And so this is a really fantastic lesson, because what you learn as an artist is the best way to stand out and to really start growing and getting an audience is by being true to who you are and not being concerned about the audience. Having a relationship with them and being concerned about their opinions are two different things. If as long as you're true to yourself, your people will find you.
Or rising and falling by their opinions.
Exactly. And so here you go. You know, and so this song might be a really classic example where it took him 30 years and all this success on the back end of his career to find the courage to go, you know what? Because he's probably at the point now where he doesn't care.
I disagree with that.
Let me rephrase that. I think he does care, obviously, but I also think you get to a point, you hear this a lot, where, you know, he's in his mid-70s. We know he's on the back half of his life. You get to a point where maybe the courage is somewhat coming from, I just can't care anymore. Mm-hmm. And so he's breaking through that, but it took him all this time to get there. And I think what we're trying to say is, be there now.
Yeah, don't let the pressure or that lack of courage, because what beauty is being stifled, mm-hmm. or what beauty is being held back? And almost in a way, I'm mad at him, because I listened to this single and it's incredible to me. That's my opinion. But I'm thinking, we could have had all of these years of beauty and emotion that he could have put out there to connect with someone. Now he didn't. But there's also the other part of it too, where if he needed to be out of the limelight, if he needed to shut all of that down, maybe the court of public opinion was too stifling. Maybe it was too much to handle. The record people and everybody all in his face and in his ear telling him what to do. There's something to be said for, I need to hole up. I need to disappear. I don't need my art and my heart to be out there for people to take stabs at. I want to go inward and really find that for myself. So there's something to be said for that too. Yeah.
Or just disappearing metaphorically, let's put it that way.
Right.
Because not a lot of people can do what he's done, and that is survive as long as he has on a relatively small catalog. I mean, he had, you know, I can't remember how many albums, 5 or 7 or whatever, but in terms of actual hits, it's a relatively small catalog. You're probably looking at 15 to 18 songs that are just recognizable tunes. And so for him to even survive the career that he has and to become a superstar, monster superstar on New York State of Mind and Piano Man and Scenes from an Italian Restaurant, is really incredible. And so it makes a lot of sense that the fear would be, well, look, I've written all these classic songs that are just a part of the American songbook and high up in the ranks. What's going to happen if I share my heart now?
It feels like a lot to lose. It feels like when you're at the top, sometimes I get that urge to be like, I'm at the top. I'm just going to quit. I don't want to.
Because what happens to a lot of people is when they get to the top, they shift from being creative and innovative and putting their energy into their soul and creating from that place to defending and maintaining that spot.
And that's you're running a business at that point.
And that's when everything begins to usually fall apart. For people, and I don't necessarily mean like a business will crumble, but what I'm talking about is for the person at the top who got the business there, if that's what it is, or in the case of an artist, that's when they begin to really have issues, because now they're defending the title. They're not just being true to who they are. And that has got to be one of the most difficult places to be in.
It's really interesting because you hear that story a lot. I feel like that's such a common story. We're talking about musicians where they got themselves to a certain point. And this is really other creative businesses too. We've experienced this. I've experienced this on a very, very obviously micro scale, but it's that drive, that talent, the not even talent, just the expression of the creativity in a pure, raw form that got him and got these people to that position. But then once you reach that certain level of success, then all of a sudden there are all these voices that come in that say, well, you have to be this way and you have to do it this way and you need all of these advisors. And it's easy to get lost in that. But then remembering, well, it was the pureness of the outpouring of my creativity that even got me here. So why all of a sudden am I doubting myself that somehow now I need all of this advice?
It's funny how many experts show up once you're at the top.
But this is a common story.
It is. But all of a sudden, all these people know what to do, but they were not there when you got there. Like, and that's his story too, you know? So it's really fascinating.
It really is an interesting discussion to think of it in terms of business and creativity as well. Because that's a real struggle, I think.
There's a point, I'm sorry, I want to make this point, and I don't mean to cut you off, but it's come to my head three times. If I don't say it, I'm worried I'm not going to. I think the fear that arises when you reach that pinnacle is, let's say he had decided to keep releasing. And now you're saying now, like 5 minutes ago, you said, I'm almost mad that he didn't, because we could have had all this great music over 30 years. But let's say you hated 75% of the songs he put out over this. Would you have not been a fan anymore? Would you have given up and walked away from him? Or would the original work have been enough to keep you around? At what point do you, as a consumer of art, walk away from someone who keeps trying and trying and trying? And so that's, to me, is a... that's a tough question, because people definitely do that.
But that could be a scarcity mindset, because if what he was creating over the last 30 years, maybe I didn't like it. Maybe the mass public collectively agreed, we don't like this. This doesn't go on the charts or anything like that. But if it was what he loved, there's going to be that group that would like that would attract to that.
So I kind of walked you into a trap there, because that's the point that I'm trying to make is you would not have left him, because you're such a big fan, because he's touched you and moved you in ways that are, you know, so deep within your soul that you're naming your daughter after one of his songs. Like he is just interwoven part of our lives. If he put out 10 terrible records, he would still be an interwoven part of our life. Therefore, the people, like, if you are afraid of losing your audience because you're afraid to be putting out things that people won't like, that's on you. That, because your audience will find you and love you regardless, because art connects with people on such a deeper level. It's the surface people who will disappear.
When you try to make something for the purpose of the praise or for the purpose of keeping people happy, you lose yourself in the process and you lose them. Because it's not real. It's not going to have a depth to it. It's going to be surfacey. So you will still probably lose them, because you can't control them. You can't control how somebody perceives you. You can't control how somebody consumes your art. They can take something and hear, two people can hear something completely different. And that's true with anything. Take a restaurant. You can have somebody go to one restaurant and it's their favorite restaurant in the whole world. And then you take a friend there and they hate it. And they have a terrible time and it's not good. It's like that's any with anything that's with art. So if you are trying to bend and conform yourself to please anybody, it's not going to work. And then in the process of it, you are going to lose yourself.
Well, and what's interesting is I think I have two good examples of this in real life. And there are two more musicians, okay? So the first I'm going to bring up is John Mayer because you know I got to bring him up.
It always goes to musicians it with always, you.
Yes, but well, we moved to Nashville, okay? So John Mayer is number one because he came out of the gate, pop album, blew up, Your Body is a Wonderland and No Such Thing and all these songs. And then he follows up with just two albums. One of them, Continuum, which is pretty much regarded, at least in the music industry, as one of the greatest albums ever written, like just performed. And he's even mentioned that. The pressure of that album almost killed his career.
This is another example of that.
But do you know what he did? He went inward and he said, forget it, I'm putting out music that I like. And he lost a major, like he was not this pop sensation anymore. And that whole Rolling Stone, he like went through that whole Rolling Stone interview and he said a bunch of stupid things and he was trying to conform. The
kind of melted down
that,
a little
the
bit.
The Heartbreak Warfare album after that was kind of like his like fight in inner fighting between trying to give the people what they want, but being who he wanted to be. And he was a mess. Well, he came out of that years later and just said, whatever, I'm making my own music. And you go to a John Mayer show now and they're sold out. And it's people who love him. And the pop people, they're long gone, but that's okay. And he has a really strong bond with his audience now. And it's a love affair between the audience and him. And that's how these Billy Joel fans
it's
are.
It's real. It's not it's put real. On by...
So he actually struggled with it in public and then came out of it in public. He didn't just shut down and stop writing songs after his masterpiece. He kept putting songs out. And now he's got this incredible career. And is just, I call him the last great rock star. I really believe that's the case with him. Now, the other example I have, so I think he did it well. I think he went through a mess publicly. We all go through messes. His was just very public. The other example I'm going to give you is Garth Brooks. Garth Brooks, like Billy Joel, kind of stopped being relevant, quote unquote, on the radio 20 or 30 years ago. And he has continued to try to put out songs and they're like all bad. And he just isn't finding any success. He's not connecting with anything that he's trying to do. And I feel like he's stuck in this circle of trying to write songs to please the audience. But he's, who knows? But when he goes out, he still sells out stadiums and arenas and he'll do two shows a day. But what does he play for 2.5 hours? The songs he wrote when he was writing music for himself. So like, but he's continuing to try. And it's like almost like Garth, just stop trying to like write songs for the world to stop trying to get a radio hit and just write what's on your heart, dude. Because when you were doing that, things were awesome. And so those are the two examples there. Whenever you bring me on your podcast, I know this is primarily visual artists, but you're going to get music for me, because that's what I do.
It's still creativity.
It's all creativity. That's what's great.
And it's all putting yourself out there in these emotional ways.
So really, I think what we're saying is, Billy, we're disappointed, but dude, this is amazing. We're really proud of you and thrilled about this single.
I think we can learn a lot from having the courage and also taking comfort, I think, in this idea that you can be as big is the biggest thing since sliced bread, mm-hmm. that you could reach that pinnacle. And that is still not a surefire or an insulating thing that protects you from fear, from pressure, from living up to expectations, from succumbing to the praise of other people and losing yourself, mm-hmm. or becoming stuck. sometimes I think it's easy for us to look at other people, and we're of course going to the biggest of the big, but even if it's just somebody you're looking at on social media, that the comparison creeps up and it's like, oh man, if only I had this, if only I had the book deal, if only I had this many followers, if only I had this business for my creativity, then I'm going to feel super legit. I'm going to feel good all the time. I'm not going to have this fear circulating or feeling just unworthy or feeling, you know, whatever. No, that's not true. There's no level of accomplishment that's going to insulate you from that.
No.
So what do we do? What do we take from that? And how do we learn from that as creatives? I think just understanding, first of all, this is going to take courage, but that courage and making those moves is going to be far less painful than the other side, which is stuck, which is people pleasing, trying to always chase the next thing, the next hit of approval. That is far more painful than having the moment of courage, whatever that looks like for you, that is an aligned action, that you know you're taking this step because it's speaking to you in your heart and you feel an inexplicable tug towards something. And there's something else that I have struggled with personally a lot in my career and just in general, which is this idea of how do you tell the difference between fear or a bad feeling that's like, I shouldn't be doing this. Because in my gut, people say, trust your gut. And I'm always like, oh, I don't know if my gut is giving me good messages.
I feel that.
I feel like the fear that's in your gut because it's a bad move, you're not supposed to be doing this, you're on the wrong path, versus the fear of you are supposed to be doing this, you know that there's something inside of you, and this is just your fear of being seen or the fear, the vulnerability or feeling unworthy to step into that. How do you tell the difference between that fear? And I heard this week that was so good, which was, we know the difference between fear that comes from, it was likened to walking down a dark alley, where there is, you are just like gripped with fear and you have this sense of, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm going down a dark alley. This is not safe. And it's, you're gripped with that fear of, I'm not supposed to be here. Then on the other hand, there is the fear with elation on the other side of it, more of like a skydiving, something like that, where you're feeling the fear, but on the other side of that, there is a almost like a high that comes from that, or mm-hmm. overcoming the fear, mm-hmm. that if you can envision yourself going through that fear, how good you would feel on the other side. I thought that was really a good way of thinking about it.
Well, I'm going to bring up Ben Rector now. Like he says, I learned to dance with the fear I was running from. And I think that's the key to success. And it's like, after he said that and his career took off, you know, it was almost like these people, these creatives are coming to grips. As soon as they come to grips with their fear, they become more real. They become more interesting. They become more, because they're no longer afraid of what people are going to think, perhaps, or whatever the fear ultimately is. And they don't box themselves in anymore. They're like, it's like, they're just able to relieve the pressure and be who they need to be. And we just watched Vienna, and I just watched Beauty and the Beast on the live action version on Friday
night.
That's
my favorite movie, by the way.
And there's that line that Kevin Kline delivers right at the beginning of the movie that I just absolutely love, about how there was a strange girl in his town growing up, and everybody made fun of her until one day they found themselves imitating her. And I think that is, I think that's the key that unlocks everything we're talking about, was that, that this fictitious girl did not let people make fun of her or bully her into a box. And after a while of just being authentic and true to who she was, everyone wanted to be her. They were attracted to her.
Well, that's the thing. Authenticity is like, it's the sexiest quality that you can have is authenticity. It's the most magnetic, the quality that you just want to be close to somebody who is authentic. I've brought her up before on the podcast, Farmer Lynn. Mm-hmm. She just came to my mind. She's somebody, we would go to the farmer's market every week back in Pittsburgh. She was just one of those people. She was authentically her. Mm-hmm. Sometimes crass, she would just say what was on her mind, but she was a woman who was comfortable in her own skin. She was not trying to prove anything. She wasn't trying to get you to like her. And that's not to say she was trying to be mean, nothing like that. No, she was just real. She was herself. And when you would go up to talk to her, she was the same with you as she was with the next person. You could just feel at ease with her. And I think that that's what somebody who is in their authenticity does for you. It just makes you relax your shoulders. It's like, okay, I can be myself too, because this person has the courage to be themselves.
And that's an energy thing too. It's not just what you say. It's literally a vibe that you put off. So you can't fake it. You can't fake authenticity, because people will see through it pretty quick. I mean, you can maybe fake it for a little bit, but ultimately you can't. You won't get away with it, because you just can't do it. And so, because there's a vibe, there's an energy around that. And people, you literally pick up on it.
And I think that's what brings us back to what we said before of trying to create art to please others, or being afraid to experiment, being afraid to try something different because you think, oh, what are these people going to think? I've experienced that, moving from hand lettering that I was doing to more of landscapes and getting into fine art. And I had all of that thought of like, who does this girl think she is? This hand letterer trying to paint landscapes. And it really is scary. Mm-hmm. But what's almost comforting that I just want everybody to feel and understand is that it's universal. Mm-hmm. You feel so alone in those feelings. It feels like everybody else has it together. They're all loved and adored and doing their thing. And then you just feel like, oh man, what am I doing? Or nobody is going to like this. Or not even that nobody is going to like it. Nobody is going to care. Mm-hmm. That's something else that just is really hard. But these feelings are so universal. But, and we have these great stars like Billy Joel to teach us the universality.
But you know what's so funny about what you just said is, oh, we're so worried that nobody's going to care. Well, if nobody cares, then what do you care? You be you. If nobody's going to care what you're doing, then why do you care what they care about?
Well, and often when you say everybody's going to think this.
It's two or three people in your life. It's
two or three people who have cut you down, mm-hmm. who have given you the side eye about something that you're carrying on.
I would bet right now in your mind, you're thinking of those two or three people right now that we've mentioned it. You are literally thinking of two or three people, whether it was a relative, a friend, a teacher, something, someone in your life, who planted something in your brain right now. You're thinking of them right now. And everything you're doing, you're trying to run through their filter. And they had no interest in what you were doing to begin with, or they never would have said the thing or did the thing that led to you feeling that way. And it's so true. Because I do it every day.
I am working through the artist's way right now in my membership, the Magic Makers membership. And Julia Cameron, she talks about the Hall of Monsters, and to name that and actually get that out. Who are your monsters?
That's a great analogy.
Who are you holding on to and telling yourself stories because you can trace it back to somebody that said something that discouraged you.
I love that. That's so good.
It's really just to be working through the artist way has really been amazing. I know I'm going to have so much more that I want to talk about working through that.
So I didn't expect the conversation to lead where it did, but that was why it was so smart for you and I to try to do it this way. Then, you know,
just to record it
to see. And you want to know here. Okay. Here's a good example. When we sat down to do this, Val said, look, we'll record this and it might be terrible, but whatever, we'll just do it. So, you know, you can love this episode or you can hate this episode. We don't care because we wanted to do it. And so, but that's the thing. Like, it doesn't matter if you hated it or loved it. It's something that we felt like talking about. And at the very least, go listen to that single. And I was reluctant to do this because my rule is I have to listen to a song 7 times before I render an opinion. That's what I have just found out. That works for me. Doesn't mean that that's like any rule of thumb for everybody else. It's not like, you know, take that advice. It just works for me. I have to listen to it. So I've only listened to it 3 times. So I haven't fully digested the song, but I can tell you right now, it's something special. It really is. And
can feel his heart.
You do. It's authentic. And you feel it. The energy of the song is real. It's not put on. It really is. And he worked with like some major producers and other songwriters. Like there's a couple other people credited on the song. But you really feel him coming out of this song. It's something special.
Mm-hmm. I think just as a few takeaways for this, anytime you step out to be seen, it's going to take courage. I think just to take this as a reminder that just because you're feeling the fear doesn't mean that there's something wrong. Everybody feels that way because creativity is always going to take an act of courage. You said that about putting out this podcast, and there's been several episodes where Mac, you know, I'm like, mm-hmm. Was that good? Was it not? And I have all of it too, mm-hmm. where I second guess, and it just feels like you just feel so open to be seen, and it's scary.
Well,
to be seen
from being in the radio forever, you know, before podcasts were a thing. I'm giving away my age now. You would do a show and you would feel horrible about it when it was over. You'd be like, that just wasn't a good show, but there was no way to get it back. Like this, we could hit delete and start over. But we don't do that. That was like a rule that I said to Val, like when you're doing your podcast, you're not allowed to edit it. It just has to be real. And even if it's terrible, we're going to put it out there because it's real. Because back in the day, we couldn't do that on the radio and you would feel terrible about it, but you just had to eventually learn, hey, look, not everybody's perfect all the time. And sometimes you're going to have a bad show and that's okay. Nobody's going to go away because of it.
Well, this is one of the reasons why I've opted to run my courses and my membership mainly live. There are 3 live calls a month in the membership and it's the same thing. You are live. And when you're live for 2 hours, there's no hiding. There's no editing there. It just is that you do, you get the realness of it, but that's something that I crave in our society and culture where everything is so edited and so distilled down. And there is something about sitting with somebody live when you know that they're really being vulnerable in that way because they can't get it back.
Yeah.
There's no editing there. But it's all scary. I'm saying that to say it's scary. I think you get resilient the more that you do it. That's another part of it where you learn that, okay, I put myself out there. I put out something that I didn't think was perfect, but done is better than perfect. And it's forward momentum. And that's something I will say has been a gift of that is you do start to build your courage like a muscle and there's resilience that's built and you start to trust yourself a little bit that who you are is okay. And who you are is enough. And you're not perfect. And you do have your stuff. And you do have your fear. But guess what? Everybody does. So knowing that, even though you feel alone and you feel like you are having your individual experience, which you are, but there are still these universal principles that you can know that if you're feeling that fear of being seen, it's everybody feels it. But the more you do it, it will be like a muscle. And that is so much more rewarding and so much better than withering away on what could have been if only you pushed past that fear a little bit to build that resilient muscle.
We have a pretty cool swing set in the backyard of our new house. And Vienna has just been loving this new swing set. And it has a rock wall on it. And she's pretty good at the rock wall. Like, she just scurries up that thing with no problem. But then there's also a rope that's part of it. And I showed her once how to go up. You know, it's like rappelling. You got to put your feet against the board and pull the rope. She wants so badly to climb this wall with that rope. And she gets like a half an inch further every day. And it's painful for her. It's hard on her legs. And sometimes she falls and this and that. But she's pushing through the pain. And I know that in another month or two, maybe three, she's going to go right up that rope, right up that wall with no problem. But what she is doing is she's getting through the part that's uncomfortable, unfamiliar, and she's building those muscles, not just physical muscles, but the mental muscle to not even be afraid of that rope anymore. Right now, you can still see it in her eyes. There's a little bit of fear there. But when she overcomes that, and then who knows what she'll be. Maybe she'll go rock climbing on a real mountain and do rappelling and stuff. And that's the same thing. It's just when she overcomes that mental fear and that physical fear, she's gonna own that wall. And that's you. And any little kid who looks at that wall would be afraid of that wall the very first time they try to do it. And that's the same thing here. We're all afraid. Everybody is afraid. You are not alone. And it's just finding that 5 seconds of courage to take the first step. So be like Vienna, grab the rope, put your feet on the boards, start climbing.
And the moral of the story is, if Billy Joel was afraid to release music in 31 years, but he pushed through all of that pressure, all of that expectation, and he did it, then you can do it too. You can take that next step, walking in courage, pushing past that fear, recognizing the feeling of the fear, where you are holding back, because you know it's aligned, but either it's vulnerable or you're afraid of being seen, so it's causing the fear. You can recognize that difference where you need to just take that next right step.
And as a creative, you don't have to do it alone if you don't want to. And one thing that I watched Val push through in all of this fear and things like this, because Val, my whole life of knowing you has been somewhat introverted and quiet and definitely not someone who's like jumping out in front of the crowd. I am the complete opposite of that. But in the last year, she started this podcast. And then she launched these courses, and now she's doing this membership. And these are not easy things for you. Like, these are like probably some of the hardest things you could have ever done, knowing who you are personally, in terms of just, you know, grabbing the bull by the horns and just doing something like that. It's a scary thing that you've done, and you've done it so well. Have you made mistakes? Have there been technical issues? Are there, you know, little problems to crop up? Of course there is. So I guess my point, though, is in the courses, what I love is that you're going along with Val as she's tackling these fears in real time with you. Val, as much success as she had, she's not like top of the world person who's looking down saying, here's how I did it. She's going through it with you. And if you need encouragement, if you need help, if you need support, I really, really recommend trying the course, the magic of soft pastel course, if that's your medium, because, you know, it is, I'll be honest, and it's like, yeah, you learn how to do soft pastel masterfully, but you get all of this encouragement and it's like developing you as a creative and as an artist. But more importantly, then the membership is awesome. It's become this beautiful community of people who are in the same place or different levels of the same place, but it's this fear helping each other move forward and take a step forward and push through this, which is one of the most difficult things about being a creative, and that is this fear. And so I encourage you to check those things out and definitely sign up for them. It's totally worth it.
Well, thank you for that. I think that saying the fear out loud and being part of that community does disarm it, because we can say that everybody feels this fear, but it still just feels so lonely. And then when you are part of that community, you do realize that we are all so similar. Everybody has their unique voice and their unique purpose that only you can fulfill in the whole entire world. You are the only one that can fulfill it. But at the same time, we have these universal fears. We have these universal feelings of unworthiness and things that keep us stuck. And I think that bringing those monsters into the daylight is what removes the power.
Yeah. And so, like, if you've been thinking about it, if you've been around the podcast for a while or watched the YouTube videos and you've been on the fence or whatever, jump. Do it for yourself. Try it for a couple months, because I think you'll be really, really happy you did. And the thing that I fear more than anything else is being in the same place today, a year from now. And without things like Val's course and membership and other courses and memberships, there are a lot of great mentors out there and people doing things. We wouldn't be able to press forward and move forward. There's awesome books and things. So that's the thing right now. If you've been on the fence about doing this and you're not sure and you're like, oh, well, you know, just take the leap and do it, because I don't want to see you here a year. I don't want to see you here a month from now. Like, every day I am constantly evaluating, how do I grow? How do I move forward? How do I keep my life headed in the direction I'm going to go? And that's almost by going inward and being more in touch and more comfortable and more authentic with who I am. And a course like this and a membership like this, especially for creatives, I mean, you really have made these things for creatives. You have a soft pastel bent because that's your medium, but they like Val and I, we get in these conversations and I'm always sitting like over dinner or whatever. And I'm just like, oh, the things that she's saying to me help me so much as a creative. And if I tried to draw with pastel, trust me, nobody would be buying it. But as a creative, like, it's been so rewarding for me, just like being on the sidelines and hearing everything that you're saying and the curriculum that you're teaching and everything like that. So I'm being a cheerleader right now, because it's super helpful. So stop waiting and go to valeriemckeon.com/course right now and look at all the things there, valeriemckeon.com/membership, and check that stuff out. You absolutely have to do it. Stop waiting. It's worth the little investment in yourself for the next couple months. Seriously, it is. Like, what are you doing to help yourself?
Don't let it be 31 years,
right,
that you wait to finally, like, release.
Yeah, right.
Release this creative energy that has been built up. And I think that is a recurring theme that I hear. People who have been afraid to call themselves an artist, afraid to call themselves a creative. They felt unworthy. They have their own hall of monsters that have discouraged them. And I feel particularly passionate about those people, and also the creatives who are so stuck in your perfectionism, so stuck in your pressure, you're succumbing to it. Your creativity is acting more of a poison than a medicine, but it can be a medicine. It can be good. It can be authentic. There are ways to get past this fear, and the world needs it. So Thank you for that little unplanned plug. But yes, I don't wait 31 years if you feel that tug.
Don't wait 31 minutes. Just go now. You're feeling good now. Just go do it now and take this 2 minutes of courage that you have in this moment and just go do it. You won't be disappointed.
All right. Well, it feels so good to be recording again in our new studio. Thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you, Mac, for joining me for another conversation about just creativity. It's always just fun to see where the conversation goes.
My pleasure.
If this was helpful to you, I would love to hear from you. Shoot me a DM at Valerie McKeon. And if this would be helpful for somebody you know, I would love it if you would share. Also, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, I would absolutely love it if you would take the time to leave a review. Those reviews really help other creatives who need to hear this, who need this boost of encouragement and courage and to feel less alone in all of these fears. It just really helps the podcast reach who needs to hear it. So if you could leave a review, I would be so grateful for that as well. And thank you again for being here. I'll see you next time. Bye.